This episode of This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you exclusively by Axia. Axia with the powerful Element Power Station combo. Just turn on the power, plug in your sources, name them with your browser, and you're ready to go. That's the Axia Element and Power Station. On the web at axiaaudio.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt.
Oh, boy. I went ahead and did. This thing's been working like a champ, and all of a sudden...
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
Our guest is Tom Hartnett from Comrex, along with Tom Ray, Chris Tobin, and Chris Tarr.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Tom Ray, VP Engineering for Buckley Broadcasting and WOR Radio in New York City. Kirk Harnack is off tonight. Last time we chatted with him, he was in Bangkok selling a console. So he won't be joining us, but we have a very interesting guest and a very interesting story. But before we get into any of that, we're going to take a little trip out to the Midwest, to Muckwanago, Wisconsin, and a gentleman that I hope to be talking trash next week about the football game, because we hope it's the Jets and the Packers in the big game. So how are you doing? How are you doing tonight, Chris Tarr?
Hello, folks. How are you doing? Yes, we are in the Midwest. Yes, I'm getting ready for the big Packers win on Sunday. As you know, the Packers are going to beat the Bears. Just had to get that out.
And we wouldn't doubt that, but as everybody knows, I'm a Giants fan, but my son is a Jets fan. And anyway, if there's a trophy to be had, I think it needs to come to New York. Going down to New York City, I'm up in the Hudson Valley, about 50 miles north of the city. But down in New York City is Chris Tobin. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening. Yeah, looking forward to the Jets game and looking forward to a fun time. And I got my dog here. He's coming after me. Hang on a second. Let's get a little crazy with the animals. All right, here we go. This way everybody knows what's going on. There you go. All right, I'm Jim Perkins, and Marv is going out there to take care of the alligators. Anyway, I'm a broadcast technologist with the CBS Radio Group here in New York City. We've got six stations, three AMs, three FMs, and we have a good time. And tonight should be a lot of fun with Tom Hartnett. I've had the pleasure of learning a lot from him over the years and look forward to hearing his trials and tribulations with Tom in New York recently.
Since Chris brought it up, we're going to go up to Boston and we're going to introduce Tom Hartnett. Now, Tom, you're the VP Chief Engineer of Comrex, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Technical Director of Comrex, yeah. I've been here for 22, 23 years or so. And I've been responsible primarily for the design of most of the latest products here at Comrex, including all of the digital audio codecs and the telephone talk show systems.
And very frankly, is one of the smartest guys I know and one of the nicest guys I know, too. And the story I was going to tell is that about 2 weeks ago, Tom gave me a call down at WOR in New York and said, hey, got something to play with. Would you like to do a remote with a Comrex Access that's been set up for Verizon LTE? Because as you may or may not know, Verizon turned up their 4G LTE network around the country about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And I said, well, you know, we have a remote coming up this past Friday. We're recording this on the 19th of January, so it was this past Friday, the 14th. And I said to Tom, I said, you know, it's a kind of a difficult location. It's on 52nd Street in New York. It's a restaurant called the 21 Club. And it, honest to God, if you look out the windows, you see nothing but buildings. You literally have to go outside on the street to look up to see any sky. I mean, it's the definition of a concrete canyon. And I said, well, come on in. I said, no guarantees. I said, what we'll probably do, this is a remote that we normally do with a Comrex Vector. Primarily, it's a very old building. The phone company can't and really won't run any cabling in the building because the floors are just too thick. The walls are too thick. You know, it's old 1920s era construction. So we got dial tone, and that's how we normally do the remote. And what I said to Tom was, I said, look, we'll do the remote in the Vector. The last segment of each hour is usually about a two-minute segment. So, you know, if 4G proves to be stable, maybe we'll put it on the air for one of those short segments. And, okay, we can say that it was on the air at a remote at WR in New York City because Tom still had a little bit of work to do on this. And I said, you know, but at least you can say you had it on the air in New York. Well, Tom shows up, and we walk into the place, and he had a couple of adjustments to make, and we'll talk about that because it's very interesting how the 4G modems work. But the thing came up, and it was sitting there. It was like a rock. It was like an absolute rock. And about, I'm going to say about 10 minutes to air, all of a sudden we lost the vector. So we dialed it back, and it came up, and it seemed to be okay, and we lost the vector. So something happened to the phone line. We don't know what happened to the phone line there. That's something we're going to have to check before we do the next remote. But basically, I'm sitting there 10 minutes before airtime with no way to get a signal back to the station. And I looked at Tom, and Tom looked at me, and I said, well, you know, all we have is the access with a 4G LTE modem. I called the studio and said, let's rock with it. Otherwise, we don't have the remote. That thing sat there and ran like a champ. I mean, 2 hours, we had a full two-hour remote, didn't have one glitch. On the front of the vector, there are little graph displays that show you the data errors and data rates and the latency and a bunch of other information. We had a couple of teeny tiny itsy bitsy, you can barely see them, red blips with a minor data error, which gets covered up in the audio coding. We did the whole remote on this 4G LTE modem on this Comrex Access, and it was absolutely flawless. And the studio was just flabbergasted. They said, oh my God, this is great. So what we're going to do is tonight is talk a little 4G, talk a little LTE, talk a little about what maybe Tom had to do to the access. I'm sure Chris and Chris, you guys will have some questions because I have some too. And I think maybe what we'll start out with, Tom, is maybe you can tell us exactly what Verizon 4G LTE is and maybe how it compares to, let's say, Sprint 4G or somebody else's 4G.
Sure. Well, let me actually back up a little bit further than that, Tom, because what I want to do is just talk a little bit about this machine here, which is the one we used. This is the actual one we used. If you're not familiar with our product, the Access, it's a little device that will work to send real-time audio over the internet from point to point. And this has really come to, in many markets, eclipse ISDN as the primary way of delivering audio from point to point, because ISDN generally, although it's wonderful when you can get it and you can afford it, is becoming more difficult to get and much more expensive in many markets. So people have been looking for the natural next step. For the last 5 years, we have been selling a lot of these little puppies because it seems to be the most common, the industry standard way of getting this done over IP networks. Now, when I say IP networks, we can work over things like wired Ethernet as well as Wi-Fi circuits. And the really exciting thing when the system was introduced was the ability to work over 3G circuits. And the box has a little USB port and a card slot that you can just pop in your carrier-specific modem to place an IP call back to the studio and have your hopefully low-delay, high-quality, and robust audio connection back and forth. Now, what we find has been happening lately is that 3G, while it has complete benefits to the broadcaster, in which you can actually have this little handheld device and run a broadcast from anywhere, completely wirelessly. The Achilles heel is that 3G has become a bit of a victim of its own success. The smartphones, as everybody knows, are taking off. People are finding new and interesting ways of utilizing mobile wireless data. And what is happening is a lot of times, even in unchallenging environments, not like New York, unlike New York City, just a challenging and normal environment where you wouldn't have, you know, the challenges of the architecture there. We're finding, particularly if there's a major event, a sporting event, the cell phone channels get so used up so quickly that it's very, very difficult to do a long form broadcast on 3G these days. So the real saving grace there is this these new 4G services that have been deployed in the last year or so, and they actually come in two flavors. One is the it's issued by two companies. One is Clear or Clearwire in some markets, and the other is Sprint. But it is the identical service. Sprint actually piggybacks on top of the Clearwire data channel when they want to talk 4G. And that's based on the technology called WiMAX, which is very similar in structure to Wi-Fi. But it runs in similar frequency ranges. It runs at the 2.4 gigahertz range that you'd find your typical wireless router to work. And that's all well and good, except it really doesn't penetrate buildings the way that, say, a cell phone or an old-fashioned cell phone did. It works well when you can get good signal when you're outdoors. But we're finding the building penetration to be a real problem. So we're really excited because just in December, Verizon turned on the switch in 29 markets and lit up their LTE service. And I was really itching to find a place to do a first broadcast, and this was a great opportunity. The real beauty of Verizon, first of all, they have really ubiquitous coverage everywhere. As you know, they're probably the number one cell phone company for a reason. They do have excellent coverage. But it's the technology that works down in these abandoned TV bands that went up for auction. And when you're talking the difference between something like a Clear 4G that's working at 2400 megahertz and Verizon 4G, which is working down at 700 megahertz, there's a pretty dramatic difference in terms of how you can penetrate buildings. And obviously, we found that on last Friday. I've tested Clear 4G in Manhattan, and there's places that you can find where it will work okay. But there's a lot of places that it won't. And unlike that with the Verizon 4G, it does seem that you can get into those buildings, get into those architectural canyons, get into those places that, and I know Tom Ray, you've got a lot of experience with 3G in Manhattan, and that's just, it's a nice starter, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, and most of it's not very promising, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's and it's kind of exciting because now I'm not saying that the 4G networks won't get crowded, but we are starting from scratch here. We're starting in a whole new band, and there's nobody on there right now. And I like to think of, you know, it may be a temporary free ride, but it certainly is a free ride right now. And I think for the next year or so at a minimum, it should be a great way to be able to get out there and do remotes, assuming that you're covered by LTE. As I said, there were 29 introductory cities on the Verizon coverage map. They just introduced another 39 last week. And if you go to the Verizon Wireless website, it will tell you whether your market's covered right now. And if it is, I would recommend any broadcaster who's doing remotes, get out there and get one of these modems while the network is heavily available.
And I would say, yeah, you're probably right on that, because it's working very well. And like you said, once a lot of people get on it, it'd be interesting to see what it does. But while we're on the subject, let's get back to the original subject in question and ask what exactly, you know, for example, is the difference between the Verizon LTE and, let's say, a Sprint 4G.
Yeah. Well, the Actually, technically, the 4G standards are very, very similar. They're all using the same spread spectrum type of technology, whether that you're on LTE or WiMAX. And as a matter of fact, the Clearwire company, who like to issue a lot of financial press releases here and there, because there's some people who are concerned about their financial viability long term, have been saying and making dropping some hints that they may actually be able to migrate over to LTE in order to have the capability of a single data device being able to work on either network. And that's because the LTE and the WiMAX in their basic structure are so very similar. I think the big difference as far as the user is concerned is a frequency band. The LTE guys got in there on the auction. They paid the big bucks to get those blocks that went up for auction 4 or 5 years ago, and they are utilizing them and deploying them in all the major markets. And that's why this is working so well.
We're going to continue our interview with Tom Hartnett of Comrex in just a couple of minutes. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor of this episode of This Week in Radio Tech. It is Axxia. Axxia Audio, inventors of the LiveWire protocol. LiveWire is actually a collection of protocols, standard protocols like real-time protocol. This is for audio over IP. Real-time protocol, quality of service, IGMP, including the IGMP querier, and UDP. A collection of these things helps make LiveWire the way to transfer audio in a low-latency format. Low-latency, completely routable, completely switchable, and perfect. Perfect for broadcast studios. That was the whole goal when Axxia got to work on inventing how we get low-latency audio through an Ethernet network. Let me tell you about a couple of things that you'd like to know about putting an Axxia studio together. Now, I've done this, okay? Kirk Harnack here. Yes, I work for the company. I've put together studios at trade shows, but I've also put together an Axxia studio at my own radio station in Mississippi. Now, granted, it's a small studio, but it doesn't take much more time to put together a big studio. Now, in my studio, we've got a console with 6 faders. We use it for a live local morning show with 3 people on at the same time. Your usual collection of network news and spots and music from an automation system. We use the same console for production purposes the rest of the day. It's a small Element console with 6 faders on it. Now, let me tell you how long it took to wire this thing up. Okay, look, I work for the company. I've done this a time or two before. Less than half a day. That's right. Before I even put in the first Axxia node, the first Ethernet switch, ran the first cable, I started a stopwatch, and in just under 4 hours, I had the studio finished. Now, I already had the furniture in, yeah. Already had the mic booms in, yeah, okay. Already had the power run under the console. But plugging in the Axxia equipment and configuring it took me less than 4 hours to complete a studio. If it's your first Axxia project, it might take you a couple days to finish an Axxia studio. If you've done it before, I promise you, you know what I'm talking about. You can build an Axxia studio and have it done before lunch. That's right. That's crazy to some people, but it's absolutely true. And with people who are installing Axxia equipment and people who are customers of Axxia, that is exactly what they tell me. Guys like Jorge Garza from McAllen, Texas, put in his first Axxia studio, took him several days. Second Axxia studio took him under 4 hours. That's how easy it is when you kind of figure it out and get into that world of IP audio. Hey, let me encourage you to watch the video on the Axxia website about installing an Axxia Power Station console. Just go to axxiaaudio.com. Point your browser there, and right there on the homepage, there's a couple of videos. There's part one and part two. The video has me and Rachel Bernard. She's there to help me plug things together and give the show a little more interest than just looking at me. And listen, we put the whole thing together in, it took us a couple hours to shoot it, but the video lasts under 20 minutes. Part one, 10 minutes. Part two, 10 minutes. And you'll see how an Axxia studio actually goes together. You need a computer and a browser to configure it. When you're done, unplug that computer and you have got a studio that will sit there and run for years. If anytime you want to make a change, no problem. Hey, with my radio station in Mississippi, sometimes I need to make changes remotely because I live a 7-hour drive from my own radio station. So get on the internet, I have a secret port and password to get into our radio station, to get into a computer that pipes me right into the Axia system. And, hey, I've made changes to the audio processing for our morning guy. I've changed the feed around so we can feed the automation on the air directly or put the console on the air. A lot of things you can do, a lot of remote possibilities, and it makes it very easy to do maintenance if you need to check on something. If somebody says, hey, this level is wrong here or there, it's easy to go in remotely and fix that. So let me encourage you again. Go to the Axia website, axiaaudio.com, and check out this video, this two-part video about how an Axia power station goes together in under 20 minutes. Yep, you're going to like it. All right, back to the show now. We catch the show in progress with Tom Ray and Chris Tobin and Chris Tarr interviewing Tom Hartnett from Comrex.
So, Chris Tobin, you have any questions thus far for Tom?
How have you found when you're in New York City doing your broadcast with Tom? How was the latency, just curious, and jitter on the network during the course of the broadcast or the test, the trials you were doing? Did you notice, like, because I know with the 3G, because it's the best effort radio interface, you know, it's the gamut of things. But did you notice, like a cycle pattern, or did it seem like a normal, not normal, but maybe like you're on a wired Ethernet connection or something to that effect? Just curious.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Chris. Obviously, I think you're referring to, you know, we have a nice little graph, as Tom alluded to, that shows you what the jitter rate is on your codec and what kind of delay, what kind of buffer is being automatically thrown in order to keep things solid. And in my experience in 3G, as you said, it's kind of all over the map. If you're out in some farm somewhere that has good coverage, you're probably the only one on your cell site, and you're going to have very reasonable numbers. Now, reasonable numbers on 3G would be something below 100 milliseconds of jitter, which would mean that a buffer on the decoder needs to buffer out 100 milliseconds in order to make sure that everything flows through the playout mechanism without any hiccups. And that's typical. I think a good 3G circuit generally runs, you know, 100, 150 milliseconds of jitter buffer, and that's generally on top of the transmission delay and the coding delay. So on a good 3G system, you're probably in the range of about a quarter to a half second of delay in each direction. On the 4G, it was dramatically different. And I've tested in New York City, I've tested around here in Boston, tested around the 128 corridor here. And generally what we're getting on average are jitter rates in the range of a maximum of about 40 milliseconds. So we're watching the buffer on the decoder side fall out to about 40 or 50 milliseconds in order to just keep everything all together. And that's pretty constant. We're not typically seeing big jumps in changes. As these things, generally when you first place a call, the buffer will do its best estimation of what it's seeing on the network in a short period of time. But then over, you know, the first 10, 20 seconds, it'll start to find its way a lot more sanely and deliver you uninterrupted audio. And generally where it finds that place is a decode buffer of about 60 milliseconds. Now, we're also finding that the 3G networks generally have a throughput latency in the range of about 70 or 80 milliseconds. So you have to tack that on to the entire delay that you're experiencing. That's also basically non-existent on the 4G. You're getting tens of milliseconds in terms of actual throughput delay. So combined with a shorter buffer, a shorter throughput delay, the coding delay remains constant. You're typically seeing, you know, in the range of 100 millisecond total one-way delay, which is, assuming you're using a modern coding algorithm like AAC-ELD, which is keeping your coding delay down below, 20, 30 milliseconds. But that's quite good. And that's, that's typically what we're used to when we're running MP3 style ISDN codecs. And assuming you have mix minus on the feed, it's perfectly workable for a conversation. In fact, it's actually can be lower delay than you're going to get on some digital cellulars.
Wow, very nice. Hey, when you were doing the test, was that from LTE modem to LTE modem, or was it LTE modem to the terrestrial, you know, internet, so to speak? You know, just off
no, we were dialing. We were dialing an IP address at the WOR studios, or when I do my test here in Boston, I'll be dialing back into our test lab here with DSLs installed.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Chris over at the WOR studios. We've got four T1s bonded for the internet coming in on this particular place where the access is located. So we had about, well, let's see, one and a half. That's it. We have about 6 megabits available, you know, plus whatever, and not counting whatever the office is using at that time. So, it was a terrestrial landline that we were dialing into. But for those joining us on This Week in Radio Tech, we're talking with Tom Hartnett from Comrex Corporation. Now, Comrex makes, telephone system, you know, broadcast telephone systems. They also make digital audio codecs, and one of their newest products is the Comrex Access. They have a portable version. They have a rack version. Technically, it's an IP codec that transmits digital audio over an IP connection. And last week, Tom brought down. There it is on the screen. As a matter of fact, Tom brought down an access that had a Verizon LTE 4G card. Now at WOR, we had tried in New York City using a 3G card before with the access, and let me tell you, it was a disaster on the broadcast. Once you get out of the city, it's fine. We've used 3G out of the city before, and it works great. But it was in the city, and you know, I kind of cringed when Tom said, hey, let's try this and put it on the air. And I said, ooh, where we're doing this remote, oh my gosh, you can't even make a cellular call. You're staring at 5 bars on your cell phone, can't do anything with it. He said, no, really. He says, this will work. And boy, he was right. The thing just sat there and worked like a champ. One of the things you had told me, Tom, when we were there in New York City, at first when you brought it up, you were seeing, it looked like you were seeing the carrier, but you weren't able to grab, and it was assigning an IP address, but you weren't really able to grab the IP stream. And there was an adjustment you made, and which allowed it to come up and work. And you had said that depending on the system that the modem is on, is that the modem will change its personality. What exactly do you mean by change the personality, and what do you have to do with the access to make it recognize this personality change?
Well, this is getting a little bit into the weeds on how we actually make the modems sing with our equipment. This is actually the modem that we used. This is the Pantech UML290 modem. That's one of the two that are available from Verizon. There's a few different ways to get connected to LTE. I happen to think the most convenient way is by a USB modem that you can plug directly into the side of the codec. It's also one of the most challenging for us because our little box here is actually a Linux-based computer. And when these nifty little modems come out, they generally are set up to work under Windows only. And then maybe a few months later, they'll issue a Mac driver. And then maybe a couple of years later, if the Linux community gets loud enough and annoyed enough, they'll start to think about issuing some Linux drivers for them. So our challenge, in order to make this a little convenient, easy to hold package and easy to run down the street with, is to try to figure out how to talk to these guys. And we do that by reverse engineering the way the Windows drivers talk to them when we get them, along with some participation in the Linux driver community, talk to the people who also have this issue, and you know, do a little bit of commiserating and a little bit of data sharing in order to figure out how to get the boxes to talk to these things. But what we found, and again, this is getting a little bit technical here, but what we found was that when the modem comes up and tries to talk to our system, it can come up several different ways. And one of the things we need to do in our firmware is to recognize what this modem is, populate all the little fields that you need to dial a call, like username, password, and this other little field used by GSM modems called APN, which is a just a little phrase that you put in there in order to tell the cellular network the type of call you'd like to make. And what was happening was the modem was coming up with a different information. We have to extract all this information off the modem when it comes up. And depending on what signal it was seeing, whether it was seeing the signal out on 128 or in downtown Boston or in New Rochelle on the train or down in Manhattan, it would tend to come up with a different requirement in terms of that APN phrase that needs to be input into the modem. So that was the kind of thing I was fooling around with before we actually got on the air. As I said, it's a little bit deep in the weeds. What you need to know is that we're the ones who need to figure this out so that when you plug the dongle into our product, it's going to just wake up. We're going to have all of the different possibilities programmed into that firmware, and you're going to be able to push that connect button and make it go. Now, as I said, that's what I think is the best way of plugging your modem in right into the side, making a nice little package. But there's a couple of other ways. The cellular carriers, particularly Clear, and this is important, are making desktop modems, these little shark fin style plastic desktop modems. And those can be very good for people who are covered by Clear 4G. Because as I mentioned, the building penetration aspect of the 2400 megahertz can be a little challenging. So one of the solutions to that problem is to get the desktop modem, put that into the window, and then Ethernet cable that over to your codec, wherever it is in the building, or even you could even do that via Wi-Fi, that short hop link. But keeping the 4G modem in the window, making sure that it has a good solid signal strength is a great way to go. Another way is these, you might have seen the ads for these 4G hotspots. They look like little hockey pucks, and they bridge the 4G signal. They have them for 3G also, but they bridge the 4G signal over to a general Wi-Fi signal. And you can then plug in the Wi-Fi adapter into this guy and pretend you're just connecting to an access point. And these hotspot boxes will convert that automatically for you onto the 4G network. And again, you would then have the freedom to orient that into a place where you know you have solid signal strength, regardless of where your broadcast is happening that day. And then move your broadcast wherever you need it to be, as long as you can, you know, connect via that Wi-Fi signal. Our sales guy, who does a lot of traveling around the world and demonstrating these things, loves that little box. He lives and dies by that. He can run his phone off it. You can run the codec simultaneously with a laptop, and the 4G generally has enough bandwidth to support all of the things you want to support simultaneously over those links.
Hey, Tom, it's Chris. Sorry.
Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I'm getting an LTE modems this week. I already have my access units with the current firmware. What tricks do I need to know, or do I just call you when I get the modems? So that's the first question. Second question, when you spoke of the drivers, the Linux drivers that you're working on, are you guys writing the drivers yourself? So you're doing the reverse engineering to make it compatible, or do you have somebody else doing that?
First question, if you want to run 4G today, just give our support line a call, because the software that supports the 4G is still officially in beta level. We're happy to let you have it, but it's just, you know, it's not published on our website as the latest update yet. You're looking for the 2.8 firmware to get that done. And there's some other nice things in 2.8 we can talk about. But the second question was, what was that, Chris?
Oh, the Linux driver. I'm just curious. Are you guys doing that in-house, or do you have to farm it out and hope for the best?
No, we don't farm it out. We generally, the things are similar enough in how they communicate. Again, getting pretty down deep into the weeds, these modems have a couple of different formats they can talk to devices in. When you plug this into a Windows laptop, it's talking through a Qualcomm proprietary interface that only Verizon is allowed to talk that way. But when you plug it into a more generic device, it talks in a more generic fashion. And if you're familiar with, say, dialing modems on Linux, you generally talk to the modems over PPP protocol, and that's the way we're talking to these. But it has more to do with actually what fields you populate, how, under which circumstances. But It's stuff we do all in-house.
Cool.
Okay, and you are listening, and if you're on the Twit Network, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech. We're talking with Tom Hartnett about 4G and the Comrex Access. And before we go any further with this, we're going to bring in Chris Tarr in just a second, but we need to take a pause for the cause and have a little spot here and for our sponsor. Our program this week is sponsored by Omnia. Okay, that's the Omnia hole, and we're going to come back in 3, 2. Welcome back to This Week in Radio Tech. We're talking with Tom Hartnett about the Comrex Access and 4G and a very successful remote we did on WOR last week with a 4G modem. Chris Tarr out in Wisconsin. Do you have any questions for Tom or any comments?
Sure. Well, this is aside from the Comrex boxes, but 4G in general. Now, I think you've gotten, we've gotten the codecs on most of these boxes, no matter the manufacturer or the device, down to the point where we're not using a lot of bandwidth. But, does anybody know theoretically what 4G is going to hold capacity-wise?
Do you mean per user or from macro sense?
An aggregate bandwidth type of thing.
Yeah, well, it's contingent on a lot of things, and I haven't seen any published specs that really didn't come from marketers. I'm afraid it's going to be one of these things that we're really going to have to find out the hard way. The reason is, there's the radio link, and you could conceivably take a look at the numbers, the location of the tower, and determine theoretically how many users could connect simultaneously over radio and what aggregate bandwidth would be available to them. But then you've got this other issue of the backhaul from the tower to the point of presence on the cellular network. And that may be, in some instances, a T1. It may be something bigger, might be a fiber, an OC3 or something like that. And that's the kind of thing that the cellular company won't tell you. They're not interested in advertising how much backhaul space they have. So, and believe me, I've asked, and I get nowhere with these guys. So I think to some extent we can go with the fact that our upload speeds right now tend to be on the 4G stuff in the range of about 1 to 2 megabits per second. The download speeds tend to be in the range of about 5 megabits per second. And I think, as the usage grows there, obviously that probably will come down a bit. But from what the marketing guys say, which again is the only real people who are speaking about data capability on these things, those numbers should hold up pretty well during moderate usage. We're seeing them in our speed tests. But even if that does come down significantly, us audio guys, we're running these things in the range of 40 to 100 kilobits per second in each direction. It's a fraction of what's available to us. And we've benefited to some extent on the 3G stuff for that, because we're not bandwidth hogs. And I got a feeling that we'll be good for a while.
And Tom, you had mentioned before when you were talking to Chris about updating his access that you've got version 2.8 coming out. For those of us who have Comrex Access units, the portables, you said you had a couple of cool things available in 2.8. Anything you can tell us, or is that still kind of hush-hush inside?
No, there's no hush-hush about it. 2.8 is available, and if you play around with it, you'll see. One of the cool things that we actually just implemented at a customer's request is, and this is going to be difficult to describe without a whiteboard, because it's a little bit of a complicated process, but we had some customers in the UK doing some election work. And they had a situation where they had 8 or 9 different reporters out in the field. And they wanted a scenario where they could all dial into the same IP codec in the studio simultaneously, all hear each other, and then have a tool that would allow the guy in the studio to, in sequence, select which guy got to talk, so that they could go to campaign headquarters A, campaign headquarters B, and so on, and have all of the other reporters be able to hear the comments all happening on one codec in the studio. Well, this was a combined effort because our friends in the UK, or the folks who sell our gear, their company's name is Vortex, came up with an interesting little software tool that runs under Windows. And what it does is it connects to your access codec, and it, by remote control, to back up a little bit here, the access has the ability to do what we call multi-streaming. In other words, it can connect to multiple codecs at the same time, but what it can't do is to decode multiple codecs at the same time. So you set up little profiles to allow outgoing streams of the same encoder to go to 9 different places, and you just one by one on the user interface select a call to connect, 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 connect. All these guys will get your stream out in the field. Only one of them can have the profile, whereas you can hear them. So that's the full duplex profile. So what this software does is actually allow you on a Windows interface to choose dynamically which guy is going to be the full duplex guy. Boom, 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 click, click, click. The guy who gets deselected falls back into being a simplex stream, so he's a hear-only guy. So it works very well, but it had an Achilles heel in that there was no way for all of the reporters to hear the program feed without hearing themselves. And if you've done remotes long enough, you know you have to have a mix and minus going back to the field, because even on ISDN, even on POTS codecs, there's always enough delay to drive you crazy if you're listening to yourself back coming back at you. So basically, there was no way for these guys to establish a mix minus so that they could hear the entire broadcast but not hear themselves when they were on the air. I know it's kind of complicated, but that's the way these things work. So 2.8 has an interesting feature where we can actually send a dual mono stream to multiple locations, and we can set up a profile so that point A hears only the left channel of that dual mono or stereo feed, and point B hears only the right channel, and you can change that within the profiles that you create on the box. So essentially, we now have the ability to do exactly what we wanted to do, because we can set up the full duplex guy in the profile that as soon as he's in full duplex mode, he's only going to be hearing that right channel, and that right channel is only going to be the audio of the host back in the studio. All the other guys, they're listening to left channel. They're set to the left channel profile only, and they're hearing the entire program. As soon as they get swapped, as soon as they get picked out of that pile and put into the full duplex guy, they immediately switch profiles, and they hear now just the host audio. And it works really well. It's a great way of doing, for example, sports roundups after a football game. We've got guys all over the country, and you want to have them participate in a conference. You've only got one codec in your remote rack, and you want everybody to be able to participate and everybody to be able to hear. So that's one of the nifty things we've added in there.
And Tom, with the one question actually I've always wanted to ask you with the multicast you had mentioned, you have you can have 9 codecs connected at the same time. Is that a software limit? Is that a hardware limit? Where did that 9 come from?
The 9 is it's a hardware limit based on the CPU that we have available in the box, but it's not a hard limit. It's actually the worst case scenario. So if you were to use the most aggressive coding algorithm at the most aggressive rate, you would be able to you would have enough CPU left over within the box to distribute that to 9 different boxes. Now, if you're under that limit, if you're not using the most aggressive coding algorithm at the lowest delay and at the most aggressive rate, you can actually go higher than that. The box will let you. We just try to keep it simple and just say 9. That's the worst case.
Okay, we're talking with Tom Hartnett here on This Week in Radio Tech with the about the Comrex Access, which is a digital audio codec that a lot of us in broadcasting use out in the field. It's an IP-based codec. Actually has you can plug an Ethernet cable into it. It comes with a Wi-Fi card, so you can use it on Wi-Fi. We're talking about using it on 4G right now, but you can also comes with a dial tone card. So if you have an older Comrex Vector or Comrex Hotline, it will work with that product as well. So it's actually a pretty good all around box for taking out in the field. But the nice thing is the portable fits in your hand, and you can just take it wherever you want. And that battery seems to last forever. Chris Tobin, you have anything to add here?
I was trying to think of something, but Tom actually just discussed it with the guys from the BBC about the multi-streaming feature. I guess what I have to do is do some digging around in 2.8 and check out what's going on in the box.
Yeah. Something I didn't mention before, Chris, was that you know. And I know you know this, but when you're multi-streaming, this is different than multicasting. You who may be IP gurus understand that multicasting is a way of actually having your network. You feed one stream into the network, and the network does the work of distributing that audio around. What we're talking about is actually creating independent streams to everybody. That's something that's supported on the public internet, while multi-streaming generally isn't. But it does require that you have that much bandwidth available at your hub site. If you know, you've got to be able to have the overhead to pass those 9 streams. Otherwise, you're going to congest your network and nobody's going to be happy.
Right, exactly. Now, when you're working with the folks, I assume you may have worked with the Clearwire folks, their implementation of 4G or LTE, whatever, I'm not sure, are they LTE or are they WiMAX? No, the Clearwire is WiMAX, right?
Clear is WiMAX, yeah.
How did you find that in comparison to LTE? Because I know researching the two technologies, a lot of similarities, a lot of similar frequency hopping method techniques, all the usual stuff in the background. Did you notice a difference? You know, not worried about bandwidth download capabilities, but just like how it's implemented, ease of use or reliability or interface, and you know, the general stuff that impacts the end user. I'm just curious.
Yeah, our big experience with Clear 4G, and for up until December of 2010, Clear 4G was the only 4G available in America, so we were pretty excited about it at the time and still are to some extent. The Clear stuff, our big reveal of Clear was the fact that they had actually covered the Las Vegas Convention Center at the NAB show 2 years ago with Clear 4G. And so we were able to, at that time, get some of the little hotspot units and utilize that live from the show floor. And at the time, we were blown away. It was really, really good. Again, we were probably the only ones on it at the time. But it in terms of throughput, it was fantastic. And in terms of general jitter, so again, the need to buffer on the decoder in order to catch all your packets in time for the playout mark. It was very good. It was definitely better than we'd seen anything with 3G. So we were pretty excited about it. But as we started talking to users and as we got some more experience ourselves, we were just getting some negative reviews, and we were seeing some places where just coverage wasn't that great. And it has a lot to do with, first of all, the spacing of the towers. If Clear covers a market, they're covering it the best they can with the towers they have, and they certainly don't have the kind of penetration of somebody like Verizon. Second of all, again, at that 2400 megahertz frequency, there's just, going around a corner makes a difference on Clear 4G because you don't get the kind of penetration through buildings. And last of all, there is a pretty significant inherent delay. We were a little disappointed when we first started playing with the Clear, and we found that we were still talking, overall latencies in the range of 200 to 300 milliseconds in each direction when you count the throughput latency, the jitter buffer, and the encoding delay. And we expected a little better. So at the time when Clear was the only 4G, we certainly felt it was superior to 3G, and we highly recommended it. Now that it has competition of something that seems to not have any of these Achilles heels, I think we're certainly guiding people more towards the Verizon option if they have coverage.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting those Verizon modems this week, so I'll be calling you next week to talk about my results and other things with the access.
Yeah, it's a baptism of fire down there in Manhattan. I'm pretty blown away with our results, too. I really didn't expect it to be quite that good.
Well, you know, I'm gonna do the test.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to do a drive test on West 57th Street between 8th Avenue and 10th Avenue. I think Tom remembers that stretch of road.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want to see.
Have you had any experience using the, for example, like the Sprint 4G? And if so, have you noticed any differences with the Verizon coverage or actually in the way it works?
No, the way it works, it's almost completely identical. I mean, again, back down into the weeds, the way we have to interface to the modems is completely different. And the Clear modem, I'll put my PG language on now, was a real pain in the butt. They're not Linux friendly in the least, considering what the hoops we had to jump through Verizon were a lot less than that. But in terms of the way they work, it's very similar. You know, you just have to know the secret passwords to make a call, and it just gets the job done.
Chris Tarr, out in Wisconsin, anything you'd like to add at the moment?
No, I was just, like I said, watching this pretty fascinating stuff. I always worry with anything wireless data, not data. It started out with the Comrex boxes for GSM, then with 3G and now 4G. I think as a kind of in the trenches guy, one of my biggest concerns, or one of the things that I always do, and probably will still do even with 4G, is, you know, I look at that as kind of a backup plan as opposed to a main plan. I think it probably still, in my mind, is more beneficial to always try to find a Wi-Fi connection or a wired connection. Especially, now 4G obviously starting out is going to be, with LTE, it's going to be pretty wide open, but when it gets congested, there may be some problems there. So I do know that, especially the AAC codecs, some of the newer AAC codecs require very little bandwidth. They SIP bandwidth. I believe the connection I'm using for running satellite programming between my two markets over the access, it's under 100K bandwidth. I mean, it's pretty efficient. But I do think, as I hear all this stuff, I still kind of shiver, even with all the bandwidth available on LTE, getting out there and turning it on, and especially at events where they're going to get a rather large crowd, what kind of jitter and delay you're going to get out of that.
Yeah, Chris, that's a really good point. And, it brings up the situation now with 3G, because we're in a situation where we're selling codecs that, they work well on 3G if you have the right coverage and you're in an area that's not overly congested. And it's difficult for us, it's very difficult to sell a product with such caveats. If I had the ability to put in my ads, this is great for drop-in remotes, but don't do a ball game on it, I would. But that's not a very good ad, and I think I'd probably get killed by my marketing people. But the fact is, 3G right now is not a technology that you would use for a long-term broadcast. It's something that you want to do the drop-in from the car dealer. You want to do the man-on-the-street interview. You want to do that kind of thing. But that message doesn't get through to a lot of guys. They think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. They bring it out to their ball game. They have the dropouts. They have the inevitable situation when everybody's on their phone and the systems get congested and they get frustrated. And hopefully, at least, I'm hoping permanently, but at least temporarily, the 4G situation will alleviate that quite a bit. Other thing I wanted to mention, I'm sorry. There, one of the other technologies that we're really excited about running is the Inmarsat links. And I don't know if you guys have had a lot of experience with these little satellite terminals, but there's a technology called Beacon Inmarsat that allows you to get an IP connection off of a satellite array, and the pricing of it is actually quite reasonable. And these little desktop modems can take very, very little in terms of setup and alignment, and don't cost an arm and a leg like they used to. And it's becoming something. Again, you mentioned backup. I've got a few broadcasters who really just cart this around as the backup for when the ISDN line goes down or when the IP connection isn't available. But as you mentioned, Chris, the experience we're having on a wire for Ethernet is really quite remarkable. I would say that IP codecs these days generally give you an ISDN-like experience if you can get access to an Ethernet wire. A lot of the frustration simply comes from the wireless, the capabilities of wireless.
And that's the thing is, the thing that the broadcasters need to remember especially is that once it leaves our cocoon and our network, it's out of the public internet. And there's so many different things that can change the experience for you from good to bad very quickly. And that's kind of the problem you can run into. Now, again, generally, I'm using every night for 5 hours. What the Comrex did for me is we have one of our radio stations in Madison does a satellite fed show for 5 hours a night. Well, we don't have room for a satellite dish down there, but I have plenty of space in Milwaukee. So we put the dish and the receiver there. We send the audio to Madison over the Comrex, but I'm also using bonded T1 lines on both sides. They do go through the public internet, but it's through, our end is pretty speedy. And generally, 99% of the time, it works great. We've been doing this over a year. There are times when the public internet gets congested or a router goes down or something like that in between that causes problems to happen. And, so as great as LTE is going to be for these things, that's one of the things I think if you're watching tonight, you got to remember. And again, you can't put it in your marketing material, but you're kind of at the mercy of the public internet and how that's performing. And you can have a perfect interface on one side and a perfect interface on the other, but you have no control of what goes on in between.
And, Chris, even then, it's pretty much the same thing with ISDN and dial tone. I mean, you've got the phone company in between. You've got the facilities between you and the phone company. It's no different, except in this case, you don't have a dial tone involved. Am I somewhat correct there, Tom?
Yeah, I think all of these things are tools. And the professional remote broadcaster knows to have a toolbox of tools, not just bringing one out there. My job is to utilize what's out there in the best conceivable way so that the equipment will perform well and the network will be usable for the application the majority of the time. I don't have control over the network, so I can never offer 100% reliability, not on ISDN, not on POTS, not on dial tone. But what I can do is to harden the gear so that it takes into account the worst case scenario and handles it the best you can. The job of the guy who uses this is to do things like go out and spec the lines at the remote site ahead of time, spec the wireless. Say if he's using 3G at a sports venue, get out there during a game and check out the wireless and see what that's like. Pull out all the stops, look at the worst case scenario and have backup, have a phone line in there, have a Wi-Fi capability so you can get on an alternate IP, have an Inmarsat modem packed into your tool kit that you can pull out. It's expensive. It's $3 or $4 a minute, but it could save your broadcast. There's a lot of different ways that you can create your backup here and get that success rate on remotes up to 100%.
And the upside is with these boxes now, we were talking about, I was kind of the doom and gloom with the middleman with the internet. But the upside is we now have the tools with these sorts of codecs to do broadcast from places we never dreamed of before that were just impossible to do with a phone line or a Marty or anything else. So, I mean, all the troubleshooting aside and the things you want to do in preparation, the other side to that is, you know, now the sky's the limit. You know, the programming people can come to us and say, we want to do this. And we can say, yeah, no problem. You know, we can make that happen. And so that's been a great advance for us to, you know, the way we can solve some of these problems now. It is a great tool to have.
Well, and we have about another minute or so here before we have to start wrapping up. One thing I'd like to ask Tom Hartnett, if he can talk about anything, is what new tricks can we expect to see from Comrex anytime soon?
Well, I can tell you that we've got a couple of high-profile intros at NAB, a couple of new, really interesting products that we have been here in the trenches just toiling away on for the last 2 years. So this is going to be a very big NAB for us. Obviously, when you're a manufacturer, you gear all of your product introductions around the spring because that's when everybody's paying attention. Beyond that, I'm afraid, Tom, I can't give you a lot of hints because it's just a little too early. We'll be cutting all of our press releases in the coming months. But if I were to give you any clues at this point as to what we're up to, I'd probably get scalped for it.
Either that or you'd have to kill me. I get it.
Anyway, but it's going to be fun. Do check us out. Do check us out at around April timeframe because we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about, and I'll be giving a paper at NAB on some of the new technologies we've come up with.
Well, excellent. Matter of fact, we'll have to talk to you after NAB and get you scheduled to come into New York City to SBE 15 and talk about some of those items, which will be after the NAB, so you'll be able to talk about them and maybe demonstrate too.
Love to. I love to come down. It's an easy trip for me anyway.
Excellent. Well, Tom, we thank you for joining us tonight. It was enjoyable, very interesting, and very informative. We'd like to have you back again sometime, obviously, particularly after NAB. And Chris Tobin, thanks for joining us tonight for This Week in Radio Tech.
Thank you very much for the honor this evening and also having Tom on, which, like I said, I have to say this again because I've learned a lot from this man over the years. True, true genius when it comes to many things and knows how to say it straight from the hip. So I just got to put that out there.
And a real pro, too, I might add.
And I appreciate no football jibes today because, you know, I'm still a little down about the Patriots loss last week. And you guys
there's been some hanky-panky there. It's not fair to the fans because I was actually looking forward to the Patriots winning.
Good for you. That's a rare attitude in New York.
Because I have a problem with professional sports and the way they treat stuff. And the Jets have just been, they just get there, they win by just luck. I'd rather win by merit. At least the Patriots, it's merit, except now what I heard about Brady. So I'm not sure what to think.
Okay.
Exactly. The game was, while it was great that the New York team won, you know, for those of us in New York, I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to see Brady play a much better game because we all know he's capable of that. And of course, Tom, I believe you said today that it came out that he had a fractured foot during the game, and he was playing with a fractured foot.
Yeah, I guess they kept that little secret. This was something Belichick likes to do, spring that on you afterwards.
Yeah, isn't that special? And Chris Starr up in Wisconsin, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, and don't forget, follow me on Twitter at thegeekjedi.com, and go Packers.
And Chris Tobin, where can we find you?
Just at CBS, ctobin at cbs.com. That'll work. I've been getting a lot of emails from everybody. Thank you very much. I hope my answers to those emails have been appropriate and on target.
And Tom Hartnett, we can always find you at Comrex, I assume.
Very easy to find me. Just call or email Comrex and I will direct. They'll direct anything sent to me right to me.
Excellent. And I'm Tom Ray. You can usually find me either at WOR in New York or on my ham radio website at W2TRR at W2TRR.com or Tom at W2TRR.com. This has been This Week in Radio Tech. I thank you all for joining us. We hope that Kirk is back from the... Oh, where is he? He's in Bangkok today. Hope he's back next week. And we'd like to have a big shout out to thank Burke for switching the show tonight. Burke, you've done an excellent job as always. And little applause for Burke. And This has been This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ray. We'll see you next time.
This episode of This Week in Radio Tech has been brought to you by Axia and the Power Station, the powerful Power Station. Whether you know a little or a lot about IP audio, you can get an Axia console and Power Station on air in just a few minutes. Check it out on the web at axiaaudio.com.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech. Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny LePay Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.